When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We got our first sponsorship, guys! This episode is sponsored by Puka Pure and Simple, a black, female-owned, handmade bath, body, and hair company that will have you smelling delicious. We've tried them. We love them. We smell delicious. Mm-hmm. Go to PukaPureAndSimple.com. That is P-O-O-K-A, PureAndSimple.com, and use the code, the number 2, B-G, 20 for 20% off your order.
Recording.
Hey guys.
Welcome to Three Black Girls, One Rose,
where three black ass girls invade the whitest show on earth,
The Bachelorette.
I'm Natasha.
And I'm Justine.
And I'm Rachel Lindsay.
Yay! Yay! So exciting, everybody. We have Rachel Lindsay on the line. Mm-hmm. This is like a dream come true.
It is. It is really.
Oh, you guys. Stop. Say it again.
keep going.
Well, we do want to open up with Rachel's season inspired us to even do a podcast in the first place. Mm-hmm. I used to watch like the last two episodes of The Bachelor just to tune in for the good mess. I didn't know anyone's name, nothing. And Natasha's been watching for 20 years.
Yeah. lifetime watcher.
And I started watching because I was like, oh, it's a black girl? Let's watch. Mm-hmm. And Natasha and I would sit and analyze Rachel's season until 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And we were like, we need to record this and get this out here just to see who would listen.
Exactly.
And now we have all of you guys.
All right. So we appreciate you, Rachel, yes, for the inspiration. We wouldn't be here.
The catalyst.
Really, to this mess.
Well, I love that because one of the main reasons I said yes is for reasons like that, you know, to represent myself to people who look like me, but don't see that represented on TV, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to hear that.
Oh, great. Well, we're happy to have you on. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, so where are you calling us from?
I'm in Dallas, believe it or not. You caught me on one of the 2-3 days that I'm actually in Dallas.
Oh, wow. So you're on the road quite a bit, sounds like.
Yeah, I have 2 new jobs. So I still have the legal job, which is a question I always get.
Oh, okay.
But wow. I work remotely. So it's rare that I actually have to go into the office or do something. But mm-hmm. I also have the radio show, and that's on the weekends. It's a little plug. Sundays, 5 p.m. on ESPN Radio. You can listen to it on the radio or the app.
Oh, okay.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, a little plug, shameless plug. And then on Thursday night, it'll air on Amazon Prime, but I do an NFL show called The Drive to Thursday, mm-hmm. and it's interviewing NFL players before their Thursday night game. So that has me traveling to whatever city they're in once a week.
Oh, wow.
Oh, cool.
You really out here.
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Hustling. Hustling. You gotta make the most of everything.
Yeah, you really hustling. That's awesome, because I feel like I read somewhere, did you study sports broadcasting or sports business or something? Am I making this up?
yes. Major in college was sports management.
Okay.
And then I went to Marquette and studied sports law. So before I was an actual attorney, every job I had was related to sports. Mm-hmm. It was just always off camera.
Okay. So now you're on camera, you're on the radio, yeah. You're really out here. That's amazing. Well, congratulations.
I'm gonna make you like me.
Yes, exactly. Well, congratulations on all that success. Very, very exciting.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, okay. So before we have so many burning questions for you. Before we get into all of that, we want to first, let's just address the elephant in the room.
And the Instagram comments.
The Instagram elephant. It's no secret, Justine and I were big fans of, you know, Peter and Eric. We used to have a whole segment on our show called the Peter and Eric Update, which we had to cut that segment because them niggas ain't doing shit. So, also, no secret, we were very critical of your choice in Brian. But to his defense, we will say he was portrayed rather two-dimensionally. So, like many viewers of the show, even Justine and I, our hopes were steered in like a different direction. And, you know, we hoped for a different finale, so to speak.
I agree. Like, when I always talk about my season, I always say my one regret is the way that Brian was portrayed. And, you know, like, I think that Brian is so sure of himself and who he is and what he wants and where he's going, that when you've never had that before, you also don't know how to accept that. And you saw that for me in the beginning. I never had a man who was like that before. So because it was so foreign to me, I just didn't believe in it until I let my guard down and, you know, realized that that's the person he truly is. So, and I think that, you know, with the show, and I kind of touched on this in my article, is that, you know, they don't want you to fall in love with the main person because we've already have our love story. But, it's, you know, it's making you fall in love with the person who they want to be the next lead, because that's how you keep a show going for 20 years. It's just Brian, in my opinion. Now, I watch other seasons, but from what I'm told, he had it worse than anyone else.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, he was portrayed. We didn't really get to fully know him in the way that we got to know, you know, Peter, Dean, Eric. We got all up in their love, in their life.
I think that's also because he didn't have like a crazy story. You know, he didn't have Dean's family or Eric, who's never been in love and had the issues with his mom. That he didn't have that. You know, like he was 37, had a career, you know, knew what he wants. Like, we were both had very similar backgrounds and were coming in for the same reason. So our story wasn't exciting.
I would say, and one of our listeners also emailed this, like, he could fit into this, like, Latino, macho, Miami guy, which is, like, what they tried to put him in. Like, they played that music every time he came on screen.
They played that awful music.
We caught it. They did the same.
They definitely tried to make him the Rico Suave. And, like, and Brian is smooth, but he's not, like, not in that kind of way. And what I hated also when watching it back for myself was you heard me saying, oh, you're just so good, too good to be true. And they took that and ran with it. And you didn't really get to see when I changed my opinion on that. So that was the only thing that was really like a storyline and a risk in our relationship where they tried to make it that, other than his mother. Which they tried to... she and I are so much alike. But they tried to, you know, like... make that something too.
You can see them really searching.
They were digging.
But y'all fell for it.
We absolutely did.
Drinking rosé, like, oh my god, a mess.
In all fairness, I said I get why people don't understand Brian, and that's not Brian's fault. That's not my fault. That's what was shown. So I actually do understand why people were misled.
Since we're like analytical viewers of the show now too, we just see a different perspective. And then after your Us Weekly blog, when you were critical about Becca's happy ending and kind of comparing and contrasting the two, where she went for a wild bigot Trump supporter and we all had to be happy for her, versus your finale that gave us a 6-minute Peter breakup and a 3-second Brian proposal, it was just completely unfair the way they treated the two of you. And it gave us a new perspective on your love story.
Yeah, really appreciated your blog. Like, that really opened our eyes to how duped we were and really put it into perspective.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, that was kind of like I won't be blogging anymore. So that was kind of like my mic drop moment. Mm-hmm. But I truly didn't plan to write that article like that. Mm. What you got was my true raw emotion in watching the finale play out like that. Like when I turned it on and it was just Chris Harrison, I said, where's Becca? Why isn't she on stage? Mm-hmm. Like from that moment on, I was just watching it with, you know, like a critical eye. Paying attention to it, comparing, seeing how the differences between our finale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I wrote about it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That you did.
Yep.
made waves and made us think differently. So mm-hmm. really appreciated it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So there's another elephant in the room in Bachelor Nation, and that is the racial diversity or lack thereof in the casting process. So we wanted to dig in that a little bit. So I listened to this interview that Chris Harrison did with Caitlin Bristow, where he was talking about how the show has evolved, and he said, quote, "Society moves the needle. Society predicates what ends up on our show. Our show is a microcosm of what goes on in the real world." That being said, you know, it's 2018. We live in a much more racially diverse world than what's presented on The Bachelor. And even like diverse media has gotten a lot more accolades. It's proven to be profitable, you know, hint, hint, Black Panther.
Right.
The Bachelor is on the same network as Black-ish, which is winning everything. So I guess my question for you, why hasn't The Bachelor kept up? Why is the show's casting so blatantly white?
I think it's a couple of things. Mm-hmm. First of all, I didn't watch the show before I was on it. I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
My two white coworkers encouraged me to go, and like we went with me, like an open cast to an open casting call, and we went more to be curious, like mm-hmm. to see what this was about. When I went to that casting call, I saw two people that looked like me,
wow.
and I was there for like 2 to 3 hours. So, in the Bachelor's defense. And Dallas is a hot spot. Dallas, Nashville, and Salt Lake City, Utah mm-hmm. are hotbeds. And so if that's the reflection of the people that are coming, they're not getting diverse people to come. And I remember in my interview, it was the first thing I said. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even been chosen for the show, and I addressed diversity in my interview. And they liked that. But I was just like, you know, the first thing I said when someone mentioned the show to me, I said, well, everybody knows a Black person goes far. I don't even watch it, and I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were talking to me about the problem and the lack of, you know, diverse contestants they see come into the show. So I think that plays a huge part in it. And then I think the other part is it's up to the lead to determine who they're going to choose.
Right, right.
So you can't force them to choose someone, you know, a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the time they pick very similar contestants. I mean, mm-hmm. I can tell you right now, Colton's not going to have a diverse cast.
Nope, we already know.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's probably going to look like it did in the beginning.
Yeah.
Just to be honest.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, like, even I think I saw a clip of Ellen that showed mm-hmm. some where he saw some of his contestants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I laughed at myself because everyone was a different race.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how it's going to look when they come out of the limo, you know?
Right.
So I just
mm-hmm.
think in their defense, they're just not getting those type of contestants. And then you do go through a rigorous, like, line of questioning and tests, psychological, criminal, STD tests. And so, like, that takes people out of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, people don't pass everything.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. True. And you mentioned that the producers say that not enough people of color audition, but yet they somehow seem to always find space for characters like a gimmick, like Waboom, or racist people like Lee, or bigots like Garrett. Like, what's the incentive for a person of color to even audition for this show?
I mean, I think that's a great question. I mean, I think my line of thinking of, well, everybody knows the Black person doesn't go far,
mm-hmm.
is how a lot of people of color think, you know, not just Black. Well, we never go far, so why would I waste my time and do that? mm-hmm. You know, or I don't want to be stereotyped a certain way. That was my thinking. It was my coworker who said, no, if you do it, you'll go far. And then I thought, okay, why not? Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's just a, we all have that thought. I mean, would you go try out? You know, would you just say, you know what, I'm going to go wait in line and try out for the Bachelor?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, no, it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's tough because as you said, if you watch the show, you see you don't go that far. You see your story's not really even given much attention. So, yeah, I've been wrestling with that question for a while of, like, if I was a person of color interested in the show, what would be the incentive for me to even go on?
Yeah.
So, it's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I had to be forced, not forced, but it was someone else's idea. It wasn't mine to go on the show.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I think that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I hoped by doing what I did that I would encourage more people to do the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you don't end up the Bachelorette or the Bachelor, you know, it's still, you know, a good opportunity for you no matter what.
True. That's true.
Yeah, there's still a chance to find love.
Yeah.
And if not love, you can go in paradise and stay on TV for a little bit. So.
You know, paradise is a much more logical option to find love than the Bachelor or Bachelorette.
Mm. Yes, yeah. We've talked about that. Yeah, you spend way more time getting to know the actual people. Mm-hmm. There's more options, more one-on-one. Right. It's not you competing against 30 other women. It's just you against seven.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the gift and the curse. There are more options, so you lose the chance of, like, someone else coming in and taking your person. But at the same time, you get more time with that person.
Right.
Yeah, see if you even like them in the first place.
Exactly.
So when you saw, out of the 31 guys casted, only 11 were black, and those 11 weren't even, like, all that great.
We're not all that.
Will didn't date black women. DeMario was a joke. And you previously expressed this frustration in your casting in an interview with the Houston Chronicle. So what were your thoughts when you saw that most of your contestants were white, considering your dating history of dating mostly black men?
So that's a good question. When I decided to say yes to being Bachelorette, I had to accept that there was a 90% chance that if it worked out for me, that the person wouldn't be black.
Mm.
Like, I knew that going in, and I had to be okay with that when I said yes. Like, I analyzed it every single way that you can before I said yes to being the Bachelorette. And so I wasn't shocked when I saw the men. I mean, I was more shocked that they weren't my type of men, and that's just not just black.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just, and I mean personality.
Mm,
like, when I first met them all coming out of the limousine, I was like, I'm not into this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking, like, as a whole, that's how I felt. And I actually said that to a producer, and then they said, go talk to them, and you'll feel differently. And I did. I felt differently after that.
Right,
but
okay.
As far as, since where the question is just about the black man, I was not surprised at all.
Wow.
With my selection of black men.
Okay.
Wow, yeah.
Did you think
at all
that the producers feared having a black couple at the end?
Oh, no. I think they would have loved that.
Really?
It wasn't forced. Like, I mean, I got to make all the decisions that I wanted to, but I think that they would have been happy if it was a black couple at the end. Not saying that they weren't happy how it ended. I'm just saying, yeah, I think that they would have loved that.
Hmm.
I think that their eyes were open to a lot of things. Like, for example, I don't even think I've talked about this before. They were shocked that a black man didn't date black women.
Yeah, Will.
And I had to sit them down. You're correct. And I had to sit them down and tell them, you find this so intriguing. I live this every day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you sit any black woman down, and they will tell you that this is not a surprise, but they were, and it wasn't like it wasn't ignorance. It was truly like, really?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really, it was a time to educate.
Yeah.
And that's why that became a storyline. Because when they told me, I think they thought that I would have been shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh no, I'm not surprised. I said, I knew that before actually.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah,
I missed the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Been there. We've seen
it. Yep. Yeah, we know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there, in the casting, like, department, are there any black decision makers in the room?
Yeah. But it's such a small world. Mm-hmm. One of the producers actually went to college with my sister in Spelman.
Wow.
So there was, she was new. Let me back up. They came on for my season.
Okay.
There were not when I was on
previously.
Nick's season.
Nick's. Okay.
Not one.
Dang.
Wow, not
and
one.
When I came in, they brought in three. There were three additional producers. One in the house with the men. One was like on the dates, because there's date producers, and then there's like house producers, I guess that's what you call them. Mm-hmm. And then there was one more, another female in the house.
Interesting. Okay, so you were the catalyst for, I guess, getting them started.
Then, yeah, and some of them are still there, so, you know, that's good.
So, now, what we've noticed, I mean, once a person of color makes it on the show, there's rarely much investment in their storyline. So, last season on our podcast, we did an interview with Lauren G. She was on Ari's season. And
which one was she?
She, pretty black girl, long, beautiful hair.
So pretty, yeah.
She went home, I think.
Week three.
She was also on Bachelor Winter Games. And
okay, I remember her from Winter Games.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we did an interview with her. She spilled a whole lot of tea. And she,
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good interview. She told us that... for her limo entrance, you know, she's from Indianapolis, so she asked if she can get a race car for her entrance. The producers told her no, and then lo and behold, Mikkel, this, you know, pretty blonde girl, walked in with a race car. She also told us on Winter Games, it seems that there was a little bit of, like, rigging going on with the voting process, because she felt as if her and Eric were really pushed to be together, and when they didn't hit it off, suddenly they were voted to go home. And then this past season, watching Bachelor in Paradise, everyone was so excited to see, you know, Venmo John and Jubilee and their whole love story. And then we got nothing. All we got was footage of Jubilee going home all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to figure out, like, are the contestants of color, are they there for decoration, or like, what? Why
no,
is there no?
I think if you're not drama, you're not going to get. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have a story.
Mm.
And so that's not necessarily, like, it just may be that, you know, the people of color have been more careful. Because Jubilee on Ben's season, I saw that. That's the one season I went back and watched.
Okay.
2 days before I left to go on next. She had a full-out storyline.
She did.
I can't say that she was put in the most positive way, but she made good TV. So I think that if Lauren was more reserved, or she wasn't, you know, like, causing trouble in the house, and it's like I didn't have a lot of drama either, but because I got first impression, because Nick and I were really cool, I got attention. If he wasn't into me, I don't know if you would have seen me at all. So I like, there are a lot of contestants that you never see stories. I mean, on my season, you know, I brought Adam and Matt to the end, and you didn't see anything about them. So yeah, like, you saw me get emotional when that went home. People were like, what is wrong with her? That's because y'all didn't see it.
Yeah.
And so, I can't just say that that's because of the people of color. It looks more that way because there's so few of them. But it's really just, you have to have a story.
And it made me think, so last season we also interviewed Diggy, and Diggy told us that he was very cautious. He's like, I got a job back home, I got a reputation. Like, he was very weary of the producers and how he would be portrayed, so he kind of stayed out the drama, and as a result, we didn't really see much of him. So,
Diggy was, I feel like I didn't say more than 10 words to Diggy.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't just that he was reserved. It wasn't that he was reserved. He, like, just did not talk to me. Like, if we were sitting on a couch, he was there. You could have sat two people in between us. But he was very, very well liked in the house. Mm-hmm. So like everybody loved him. They were shocked when he went home. They were so sad. Mm-hmm. Everyone was like, no, not Diggy. But then I was shocked when everyone was like that, because I was like, well, he doesn't talk to me. You know, I don't know Diggy at all, like, other than he's from Chicago. Yeah. I couldn't tell you anything else.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
which was disappointing for me,
yeah,
because the producers liked him a lot. The guys in the house liked him a lot, and mm-hmm, I wish I just could have seen that Diggy.
Right. Damn, that's interesting.
It is.
It's funny to hear the other side, because, yeah, he made it sound like he just was shy, or I don't know.
Yeah, like he was like trying to protect
him.
He was
shy. Mm-hmm. He was shy, and maybe that is why he was, but to me, I was like, this guy doesn't talk. You know, like, he seems scared of me. But it could have been that he was shy,
yeah,
you know, but it was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing there, because there was nothing there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, can't force it.
Do you feel that your season, considering how racially diverse Ari's season was, shifted the culture of the Bachelor franchise?
No.
Hmm.
Oh. You mean like as far as the viewership?
Not so much the viewership, but I guess mainly with the casting. Mm-hmm. So, and so, I mean, you just revealed to us that they brought more people of color into the casting room during your season, and then we just noticed how Ari's season was a bit more racially diverse, you know, directly after yours. So I'm guessing, you know, that there was some type of shift,
yeah,
as a result of you.
Yeah.
Watch Colton season.
<It's> gonna the pendulum's gonna shift back.
I just have a feeling.
Oh no.
Damn, so we had a moment, and that moment's,
yeah,
about to
it's about to just be over. Well, with the show now having this tradition of picking its new lead every year based upon fan favorites from the previous season, and the track record for the show is that men of color don't make it too far, do you think we'll ever see a Bachelor of Color, and how many years will it be until we see another Bachelorette of Color? Like, what's it going to take?
I definitely think you'll see a Bachelor of Color before. That's a tough question for me to answer. Maybe it's more so I hope you'll see a Bachelor,
mm-hmm,
of Color.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I don't think my season was negative by any means. I just don't know if it happens, it'll be a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see it being a Bachelor before a Bachelorette, just because there hasn't been one.
That's interesting, because I almost think the opposite.
Me too.
Like we might get another Bachelorette before, because, I mean, the track record is that men of color on The Bachelorette don't last that long, mm-hmm, versus on The Bachelor, the women of color seem to go a little farther and maybe have a chance at becoming a fan favorite.
Yeah.
And like what we saw with CN. CN was
exactly
very beloved and made it pretty far. But I can't name any man of color that has made it very far on The Bachelorette to the point that they might have a chance. Aside from Eric, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Eric.
I mean, mm-hmm, Eric made it to the top three, but the sad thing is I don't think anybody really thought that he was in the running to be the next Bachelor.
Yeah.
Right.
So what does that say?
Right.
You know, because usually you look at the top four,
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm, to be the next Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really considered,
mm-hmm,
Eric for that, and mm-hmm, he technically, by numbers, should have been in the running.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, CN would have been great, but, mm-hmm, I mean, like, I can't remember what I said. Somebody asked me, who do you want? And I said, well, CN is my vote,
mm-hmm,
but they're not going to have two black bachelorettes in a row.
Yeah.
Right.
The sad, sorry truth.
It is. And yeah. I mean, luckily she found someone in real life, so like she didn't have to.
Right,
do
and
this.
He's really nice. I've met him before. He's really nice.
Yeah, they look cute. They look happy.
They do.
Yeah, damn, that's.
Yeah.
It's like the ultimate question that no one has the answer.
Right.
We have no idea.
I think it's just going to depend on who you get, like the pool of people, and then how the audience refers, responds to that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The show, I feel like the show has really set it up in a way that there's a chance it might be a while because of this tradition of picking the new lead based on last year's. And so as long as they keep that tradition up, we just don't know. It always depends on the pool of people.
Yeah. It really does.
Yeah.
And again, I can't say it's all the show because I went to casting and I saw two people. I told you they look like me.
Right.
So
that's true. What do you say to maybe some young women of color who watch The Bachelor or The Bachelorette and can't identify or don't see their love story being told?
I mean, I don't think that you can look at my love story and then compare it to your own love story.
Mm-hmm.
It's more so looking at me as a Black woman, you know, and then if you are a Black woman as well watching me, saying, you know what, like, I can break down the barriers and be that person too.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, being Bachelorette was very empowering for a number of reasons. But I like wanted to be an example for people to say, you know what, like, I can do that too. Even if you don't go, through the show and do it that way, just more so I can step outside of the box. I can go after what I want, who I love, you know, even if other people don't agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
I can put my, you know, like, not just focus on my career, but go after what other things my heart desires as well.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think it was a very powerful image seeing particularly a show that is so just white.
Yeah, like, so historically
white. White to see a Black woman in that space making decisions, running things.
Yeah.
I know for me, as a Black woman, you know, I've grown up predominantly in white spaces. I went to a predominantly white institution. I, you know, have watched many, you know, beautiful white girls in college find their love story and always be the chosen one. And I kind of have to sit in the background. So it was empowering to see someone of color who looked like me dominating in such a white space.
And being sought after by all races, you know, like the men are going after a Black woman. When have you ever seen that on TV?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah, no, never. And I had a similar experience. I went to a PWI and I always felt completely undesired. I lived in one room with seven other girls. All seven of them had men fawning all over them at all times. And I was like, I maybe had like one or two boys to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just awful. But I mean, Barack Obama was also elected president, so I had that to hang on to. But still,
yeah.
Like, that was it. I just had Michelle to hang on to, but that was it.
But watching your season, there was definitely something very empowering to see a woman of color being sought after.
Yeah, and desired. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think people don't understand that unless you are a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's one of those things where you don't have to think about it because you don't have to think about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It goes back to that, like, being the only one when you walk into a room.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you don't think about it because you're not the one walking into that room in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we know and we we recognize, so all right, we have some other burning questions about your season of The Bachelorette.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, your Bachelorette, you have 31 guys standing in front of you. You spend, it's seemingly very limited time with each guy. How did you trim the fat each week? Like, what were you looking for? How did you know you were making the right decisions?
Well, I always say my mom told me to trust my gut at the end of the day, which I truly did. But, you know, those lawyer skills came into play. I mean, I wasn't playing with the questions. The questions, I was interrogating people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people just counted themselves out, like a waboom, you know, it was very obvious,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, you know, like when an ex-girlfriend pops up or something like that, like, you make it easy for me, like, I don't have to, you know, try that hard.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more so just asking the right questions. I really didn't waste time. I should also say who I just vibed with, like, whose energy I would feel at the same time, you know, where was the conversation easy and it just flowed? You know, I really didn't focus just on, oh my gosh, I think that person's attractive. Like, I really paid attention to the conversation we had. And then one of the main questions I would ask initially, like the first night, is, so how did you get here? You know, like, why are you here? And that was very telling.
That would reveal a lot.
What do you do? That's kind of telling too.
Yeah. What is your job? Do you have a
job? Do you have one?
Yeah. And then later, I started asking more serious questions. Like, I asked everyone, you know, have you brought a black girl home before? Have you dated outside of your race? You know, what would that look like if we did? You know, moving forward, raising a family. Yeah, I asked those questions. And then in the fantasy suite, I asked even more detailed questions. So I really, you know, I mean, you never know a person until the cameras are gone, but you know, you can just do your best to ask the right questions and then trust your gut.
Right, yeah.
So speaking of, one of the themes that we talked about for Becca's season is people and their words, and the fact that on The Bachelor, all you really have is words because nobody can really do the actions that they wish they could do following through with any of their statements. And also, you mentioned earlier that Brian was not only a smooth talker and kind of knew the right thing to say at the right time, but was also someone who was really sure of what he wanted. And you said there was a moment where you realized that. When was that moment when you knew, okay, he has both? He knows what to say, when to say it, and he means it.
So the second date that we had, we were in Geneva, were telling to me for every single relationship that I had, like the one-on-one dates. I had summed everybody up, Dean, Peter, and Brian, at the end of those one-on-one dates. And it's crazy what a second date will do in that world, but it really, because, you know, like, you meet everybody, you see everybody on a group date, whatever, that's, you really can't get to know someone. You give them one one-on-one, but you're, like, caught up in the magic of the date and how great it is and finally getting to spend this one-on-one time together. And then you have the second date where you're like, all right, like, let's get to it kind of thing, you know, and just seeing how it's easy to have one date with someone and find something to talk about, but the second date, is that still there?
Right.
Especially when it's getting down to the wire. At that point, it was down to right before hometown, and it was, oh, I lost my train of thought, but I remember with Brian, I needed Brian to go deeper with me. It wasn't that we were surface, but it was like I knew we connected, I knew I felt his energy, but I wanted to get, I wanted him to, like, tell me something personal. And I didn't want to tell him that. I was just, like, looking for that in my day, like, to go deeper in our relationship. And then he started talking to me about his past relationship and kind of how he got to the show with that and how it affected his family. And, you know, we really started talking about, like, I started sharing from my past and my relationship and how I got there. We connected with that. We were bonding over our past and some of the struggles that we had. And that's something that I needed from Brian. And that's when I was like, gosh, he really is who he says he is, you know, because I feel like you can't, oh wait, I can curse on this podcast, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel like you can't bullshit a bullshitter, right? Not that I'm a bullshitter, but I am a lawyer. So I just feel like I can, like, read through that. And so there was no bullshit with Brian. Like, everything, I just felt it. And that conversation that we had at night really sealed the deal for me. You know, because there wasn't, we weren't on this date. We weren't on the date anymore. There was nothing glamorous. It was just the two of us. I mean, and a bunch of cameras. But it was just the two of us sitting there having a real conversation. And I remember thinking, gosh, they're letting us talk for a really, really long time.
So you got your answer. Yeah. That's how you know he was the real deal, basically.
Yeah. Because then I had a date with Dean, and he started talking to me about dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs.
And I was just like, gosh, I really like Dean, but I mean, like, he's just not ready for the same things I am. Like, it's like, we have fun, and, you know, like, that's where it is. Yeah. And then I remember on my date with Peter, he started talking about his ex-girlfriend, and the way that he was talking, I just remember, and I said this on camera, it's like things you don't see, I remember I was like, something's off. I was like, something's not right. Like, I came into the season saying I wanted somebody who knows what they want for themselves, but then also wants those things with me. And in that moment with him, I remember thinking, you don't know what you want. Like, you don't know, and not even with me, just, like, with yourself. Like, you're still trying to figure some things out. Like, it was a very telling conversation. And that's, like, where the gut kicked in. And I remember thinking, you know, we work in this world, but we wouldn't work in real life. And I think that's what separates, you know, couples that make it and don't make it. You don't pick the person that, you know, like, you're fantasizing about in this bachelor bubble. You pick the person who, yes, like, you have this connection and this fantasy with that you can take and move that into the real world. And it can work, too.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you had to really test them and figure out, is this just, are we all good here in this bubble, or is this actually the real deal outside? So
yeah, because I remember at one point with Brian, like, I felt like he was, like, he knew how, like, good we had it, and he was real comfortable. And I remember right before the end, I, like, said some stuff to him to try to, like, shake him up. You know, like, I said something like, you know, I just didn't know, and I'm so confused, and this is too perfect. This is too I'm too sure of this, and I'm used to picking the person who I have to work for. Or so I was like, that is true. That's been my past relationship. Okay. So I was just like, I just don't know, but I was really just trying to throw them off. They didn't show that either. I'm trying to rattle them.
Yeah. And he passed the test. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, he was just like, listen, I know what I want. Yeah. And it, like, did not shake him at all. Like, he was going to go give it his all. And at the end of the day, I remember we talked about this afterwards, he was like, at the end of the day, I knew that I gave everything.
Yeah. And, yeah, he can be proud with himself that he left it all out there. So
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So one thing that viewers of the show, we always talk about is this moment when the lead gives a rose to a contestant who is very clearly, like, a joke or a gimmick. On your season, that guy was Waboom. So when you gave Waboom a rose, this is what viewers call a producer pick, meaning in our heads, the producers made you do it. Is the producer pick a thing?
Yes. Sorry, no, I didn't pause because of that. I paused because Brian's trying to eat my food.
Relaxed, a lot of anticipation.
Yeah. You can have one. Yes, there are people, like, it's obvious that you're not going to like every single person.
Right.
So, you know, there are some, I mean, at the end of the day, it is a TV show. And so they're in the beginning, the very beginning, I would say that you are encouraged to keep certain people. But after the first week, I was like, I can't do it anymore. he did not make it after the first week.
No. Yeah, you get a couple, y'all get a couple picks, and then that's it. I need to find my husband.
Yeah, right.
But I will say, sometimes it's, yes, there are, in the sense of like a Waboom. Yes, that's one. But then there are some times where producers know things that you don't. And so you might say, well, I'm ready to send that person home. You know, like, they're not opening up. And they're like, just give them a chance. You know, like, we know you. Just give them more of a chance. And, you know, you may really like them in a different way.
Okay.
So they're good for that, too.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Just encourage it along. So speaking of, you know, problematic contestants, I guess, we want to talk about Lee for a second. So, like, in the middle of your season, everything was blowing up about Lee. All his tweets and Facebook statuses were being released. And then Lee himself, you know, he did an interview, I think, with the Hollywood Reporter, where he said that a producer reached out to him via Facebook to be cast on the show. Now, to this day, the producers are claiming up and down that they didn't know that Lee was, like, a fucking racist. To us, it seems like Lee was placed there almost potentially to maybe antagonize the black men in the house. Like, why do you think Lee was cast?
So, it's my understanding that all that stuff came from Twitter. And because I know a little bit more, like, about the process that you go through, when you go through your background, they ask you what your handles are.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's it. So you can say, you know, like it was for him, I think he had deactivated that account, but someone still had access to it or something, mm-hmm. and gave them a different Twitter handle, a different one he was using.
Oh.
So I know how, at least during my time, mm-hmm. that's all they asked for in regards to social media. Now, I'm sure in light of things that have happened over the last couple of years, they probably have a more rigorous social media background check.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, that, so, you know, I understood how that could, like, slip through the cracks. Because of my own experience, but I didn't think that they put him there to antagonize people. This is my belief, and this is, goes beyond me.
Okay.
When you go through your casting, it's very revealing the type of person you are. You know, whether you're sensitive, whether mm-hmm. you're...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Justine, how is your social battery these days?
My God, I am to the brim. I still have time for my yoga practice and reading every night, but I do have a ton of invitations to outdoor happy hours, events.
Mm-hmm.
This past weekend, I spent with almost all of my best friends at once, and by Sunday, I was completely drained. Mm. What about you?
Yeah, I've been feeling pretty decent. I've been getting a lot of me time, which, you know, is very
nice.
Important to me.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely know what it's like to spread myself too thin, particularly socially, mm-hmm. especially with the weather getting nicer, wanting to be outside all the time with all my people.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. I totally get it, friend.
Mm-hmm. It can take some serious reflection to understand what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge. Maybe you're like me and you thrive around people, or maybe you're like Natasha and need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Now, y'all know we are huge advocates of therapy. We talk about it all the time on this podcast. It's been tremendously beneficial throughout various stages of my life, from being young and single and struggling with loneliness. Therapy massively helped me to cope. Dealing with work stress and crippling burnout, therapy really helps me to set boundaries with myself and prioritize my self-care as well.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/2BG1R today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/2BG1R.
You're dramatic, mm-hmm. whether you're going to be a villain. I think they ask very pointed questions to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they could probably, once Lee got in the house, I think they asked everyone, have you ever dated a black girl before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those type of questions. You know, like with Lee, I think it came out about like black friends and being around black people, and he hadn't really.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they probably knew that they had something there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it was to the level of, I do not think that they knew that he had those tweets out there. I really don't, because that was embarrassing for them.
Mm-hmm.
That was embarrassing for them to have the first black bachelorette and you cast somebody who's tweeted like that.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that there was some antagonizing going on as far as, because I think they do that with everyone. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
if you're a crier, they're going to say stuff that can make you sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's part of producing good TV. So I think mm-hmm. that they realized that he had it in him,
mm-hmm.
and he was uncomfortable in the house, and that's what you saw on TV as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they knew about the tweets.
Mm. Okay.
Mm. Still sits
wrong with me.
Wrong
yep.
with me, man. I don't know. It's real.
And they not mind. That's just my belief. I definitely think it was obvious that he was uncomfortable in that house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that came out during the show. And I think the questions were asked to make that come out even further.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay.
Damn. It's a shame.
I know.
It's a shame. It was like, it put a weird little taint on the season.
Oh, and there were so many media outlets that were like, we're done covering The Bachelor. We're not doing this anymore. Or GQ was really, really upset with
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think they did know. Because yeah. mm-hmm. it's one thing if they did it during like a non-black person, but mm-hmm. to have that come out, that's mm-hmm. embarrassing for them.
Yeah,
yeah, very
and
much.
Mm-hmm. I think they want a color to be a topic of conversation, but not that topic.
Right.
Yeah.
So they got a real rude awakening with that dude.
Yeah. So one thing we're trying to wrap our heads around is falling in love with two people. We were uh-huh. really hard on Ari for changing his mind, and we were a little bit...
I was too.
Yeah. and we were confused watching this edited, spliced version that we mentioned earlier about this tearful breakup with Peter and then accepting a proposal from Brian.
Yeah.
And we're obviously two black girls in New York City, so falling in love with two people is rare. So walk us through what it's like falling in love with two people.
Okay, so I didn't fall in love with two people. If you pay attention to what I said,
okay.
I never said I was in love with two people.
Okay.
And to me, that was a difference. Like, I told Dean I was falling in love with him. I told Eric that. I told Peter that, you know, and I have had love for all three of them in different ways and for different reasons,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like I'll stand, you know, true to that. I never told anybody except for Brian, and he and I actually talked about that in Fantasy Suite. He's the only person I ever said that I was in love with, because mm-hmm. I do think that you can love someone, but I don't think that you can just be in love with two people. I just really just don't. Like, there's mm-hmm. another level. It jumps to a completely different level. And I told Brian that actually in the Fantasy Suite because he asked me. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, I said I love you. And he goes, no, there's a difference. He was like, are you in love with me?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we talked it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so so saying all of that, like, I definitely had love for my top four. You know, like, okay. I would even say that about Matt, and that's why you saw the emotion that came. Like, we connected in a different way, and so, like, I had a lot of love for Matt.
Mm-hmm.
We were a lot alike.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the thing with Peter and what y'all saw, so I told the producers at the very beginning that I didn't want to have two people propose to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was okay. very adamant about that. Had I known that it would have played out like that in the end, I would have just had them both come up there. Because then you wouldn't have had any questions. But because of the way that it ended, it looked like, to the audience, and I get it, it looked like, well, you're not going to do what I want, so this is what I'm, like, I have to have a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew, so in that last day, I was told you have to send Peter home now.
What?
So I went into, so when I went into that room, I've said this before maybe a couple of times, I knew I was sending Peter home that night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was already emotional, because
yeah.
any lead that you talk to will tell you it is so hard when you get down to like those last, really the last two,
mm-hmm.
because that second person is thinking that, like, okay, Peter said he wasn't going to propose, but he still was thinking, okay, we could still be together.
Mm-hmm, right.
So that person is thinking that they're going to leave this with you. So you're having to shatter somebody's future, for lack of a better word. So that's hard. No lead will tell you that they had an easy time doing that, even if they knew what they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you underestimate how hard it's going to be. At least I did. So I'm already walking into the room thinking, I'm about to send this person home. This is so sad. Well, when I walk in the room, within 10 seconds, he's like, listen, I'm in love with you, but these feelings are new to me. I don't know how to handle them, so I still can't propose, but I want you to know I'm in love with you.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, he reminded me of my ex-boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Give me just enough, you know, just what to say to make me stay,
mm-hmm.
but you're still not giving me what I need.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Like, you're just a little bit, and I felt like, and in that moment I thought, I knew I was going to get emotional because I was in a relationship for 5 years before the show, and I did think that that was it, but I was stuck in that place of dragging me along, but was never going to make a commitment. And so I thought to myself in that moment, gosh, this could be like, I bet a lot of girls have been through this before, but it didn't come out that way on camera. But I was like, you were giving me just enough to hang in here and to say, to accept staying with you, even though it's not a proposal, because now you took it a step further in saying that you're in love with me. So that conversation was 4 hours.
Oof.
Y'all saw 10 minutes of
it.
My God. They never let you talk that long. It was into the middle of the night. It was very emotional, like a back and forth, you know, like I'm saying this, he's saying this, I'm saying this, and like we were sitting on the couch, they were having us talk it all out. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, it was a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the emotion that I had was real. It was hard. Mm-hmm. It stirred up old feelings from a past relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, so I'm tired, you know, 4 hours of going back and forth with that. It's the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And so all of that was what you saw coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, I don't deny any of it. I don't, like, make excuses. I mean, like, the emotion was real and it was raw, but all I try to do is explain the context of the conversation, and that's, like, the best that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like I was regretting it. It wasn't like I was questioning my decision. Like, the only thing that I think they showed an interview afterwards where I was like, you know, like, maybe he's right, but I wasn't talking in the context of, you know, like, maybe I should go be with him, I should run after him. It was more like, you know, like, I was saying, maybe he's right and that you have to take your time in this situation. I wasn't saying it in the sense of, he's right and I want to go run back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't see that. So, you know, like, nobody saw either that he said he would propose, and I still was like, no, like, no. He was like, well, fine, I'll propose to you. So it's like, if I really wanted it that bad, I would have just accepted that sloppy, you know.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so, you know, but I think what added insult to injury was that what you didn't see the next day. So it literally went from that to seeing me getting dressed and walking, you know, up at the castle. You didn't see me. I cried in my interview talking about accepting a proposal from Brian and how I've never, you know, like, I can't believe I'm getting what I want. I can't believe, you know, like, this is a happy ending for me. You know, I was talking about why I was picking Brian and Brian was this and, you know, how I almost, you know, because I was scared of who he was and all this stuff. And, like, I almost let a good thing go because I was accepting something that, or I wasn't going to accept something because I never had it before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about all that. You didn't see any of it.
Mm-mm-hmm.
You didn't see Brian talk about how he was excited to propose to me. You just saw him pick out a ring with no name and then hopping out of the limo. So you never saw, understood why we were saying yes to each other, other than the proposal. And then the proposal was so windy. And I remember I was crying before because I was like, my weave is showing. This is really embarrassing. Oh, yeah. I was like, you don't understand. It's so, I was like, I just want to be so beautiful for him on this day. And I was a hot mess. Like, I was crying up until Brian walked up.
Oh, no.
Like, all
oh,
of a sudden, Brian walked up, and then, like, the producer had to run out of the screen. So it was just, like, you know, and then the moment that we, after he proposed, the wind stopped. Like, it all just, everything stopped.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, see, this is why we love to do this interview, because we get the context.
Yep.
Because as you said, and as, I mean, as we know, we see a very edited, highly edited version of it. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, Brian, we didn't get to see him in the way that we got to, we didn't get to know him in the way that we got to know some of the other contestants.
Mm-hmm.
And also your relationship development and the development of your proposal wasn't given as much screen time in that finale. What, you know, what sides of Brian do you wish we could have seen?
You know, I wish that you could have seen his sincerity and just how positive he is. He is such a positive person that I think it makes people uncomfortable. Like, even for me, like, I wouldn't say that I'm pessimistic, but maybe I lean more towards that on the spectrum. He just gave me a look like, are you kidding me? So maybe I am pessimistic, but I had never had that before. So for me, I was kind of like, I even said at one point on the show, I was like, this is not a fairy tale. Like, you need to, like, calm down. But that's just his outlook on life. Like, Brian read all these, you know, books about positive thinking and listened to these tapes. Like, he's into motivational speaking and all that kind of stuff. And that helped me understand the person that he is. Because that's not me. And so, I definitely got a better understanding of him in that sense. And I wish you guys would have, too. And then also, like, him talk, there was this conversation we had at the very beginning. First date he went on, and he was the first person I pulled, and he started talking to me about family and how important it is to him and how his parents are still married and about his dad having cancer and how his mom stuck with him. And then, you know, how his dad was married before and had three kids. And he just talked about, like, the love that his parents had. And that's the example he had. And he wanted that for himself. And he talked about why, you know, he was 37 and still single. And so you got to understand him rather than just saying, you know, like, who is this guy and why is he here? You know, all you saw is that we had, like, this physical relationship. And it was it was so much deeper than that. But again, it wasn't good TV.
They got to get eyeballs on the screen, so they got to follow the drama, I guess.
And seeing how your finale panned out, where that editing really was made to favor Peter over you and Brian's love story, and your happy ending, really, where did you leave things with the relationship with the producers and the creators of the show?
Okay, so you know I didn't get to see the episode until I was on stage. So I was livid. And I think that's part of the reason I was on stage. You wanted to get a reaction out of me, and you knew I would give it to you. In every episode before the finale, I was able to view. That was the only one that I couldn't see. To be honest, I was very upset. But at the same time, I was just so happy to be... like, out in public with Brian, and we were just happy to, like, be in love and not have to hide and share our love. And then we were hit with, like, the hardest day of our relationship when it should have been the happiest day, which was the following day. I mean, we were reamed in the media and had to do a media tour, and that's when I, like, at one point I broke down. Like, I started crying. Like, that we had to take a break between it, because it was like stuck in a place of, you don't want to talk bad about the show, but you want to respect the relationship that you had. And then in addition to the finale, everybody was on me for how I was to Peter. And I was like, you know, people are like, what, I'm engaged. What do you want me to do? You know, like, I think people thought that I was, like, supposed to still be in the place that they saw me in 3 months ago. So I wasn't, like, I actually am close to several producers. I think it's more of, I have to look at it from a business standpoint, which I feel like I'm able to do. It's, they have a job to do at the end of the day. And I can't be mad at that, because I was never manipulated into finding the person that, that I wanted to find for myself. You know, I had this opportunity to do it. Like, they didn't mess with that process at all. And you know what, and when you sign a contract, you never know how you're going to be portrayed. But at the end of the day, I found the person for me. So it's like, like, what am I going to stay mad at? They're there to do their job.
That's true. Like, you can stay mad, or you can just be like, look, I signed up for this, and I got my, my lover at the end. So peace out.
So let's move on to Becca's season, which, as far as the casting went, was quite a season. We had Lincoln, the convicted sexual offender. We had Leo, the massive misogynist. And Garrett, who was Captain Make America Great Again. So should we, as viewers, buy that the producers claim they didn't know about any of this, particularly Lincoln's? That really got me.
Yeah.
I have no answers for that one. I don't know how that slipped through the cracks.
Us neither.
I don't know. That's a public record. Yes, I don't know. Right. I do not know how the Lincoln thing wasn't known. I do not know.
So is this... like, is this, do we take their word for it? Or is this done for publicity? Like, what was this?
But see, again, that's like, it's just, it, I can't say they did that on purpose. That looks so bad.
Terrible.
You know, it's a sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. That looks, no, you don't want that kind of publicity. Like, that, there is a such thing as, like, publicity not being good, mm-hmm. and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, so somehow it slipped through the cracks. Like, I'm sure the person who's doing criminal background checks doesn't work there anymore.
That intern got fired. Yep.
Yeah, it sounds like it was an intern. Googling.
Just doing Google. So more into Becca's season. Justine and I, our finale episode for Becca's season was titled Becca is a Vision of White Liberal Female Privilege. Because we were pretty disgusted, pretty disappointed with how, you know, someone who was allegedly, you know, Miss Social Justice, mm-hmm. Could turn a blind eye to Garrett, who obviously has MAGA-leaning political beliefs, in a way that as a woman of color would just be a deal breaker for us. And so I'm curious on your seasons as The Bachelorette, on Nick's season as The Bachelor, were you able to have deep conversations with your contestants about politics, religion, social justice? Like, was this part of your decision-making process?
I have those questions in the fantasy suite, yes.
Okay.
I was not going to let somebody put a ring on my finger that I didn't know. I asked Ryan what his credit score was.
Okay.
Like, wow. I was not going to, like, mm-hmm. let... You know, like, if my parents, I already knew, were going to be like, what? So I needed to be like, no, listen, I did as much questioning as I could. No, yeah, we talked about religion. We talked about how we would raise kids. We talked about politics. Mm. I asked him about, did he vote, you know, in the last election? Mm. How did he vote? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, I asked all those questions, and I actually told Becca to do the same. Mm-hmm. I said, I use my fantasy suite to ask the questions that you can't really talk about on camera.
Right.
You know, I said, like, have a good time. I was like, I really had a legal pad in there. I had written out, like, all these questions.
Nice.
And it was really real for me, mm-hmm. by the time it got down to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how did Becca choose Garrett? Do you have any clues on this?
I mean, she may not have asked those questions. You know, I can't say, I haven't talked to her about that. I can't say, from what she said in interviews that I've seen, mm-hmm. you know, she didn't know. So I guess those questions weren't asked, mm-hmm. or I don't know how he answered them. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just glad that I wasn't in that situation.
Because mm-hmm. that would have been a mess.
Yeah, you just had a part two. You just had a second season.
Yeah, I'm just, that's a tough pill to swallow, to find that out after somebody's proposed to you and yeah. you said yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That I'm very thankful I wasn't in that position. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that, again, that to me speaks to her privilege.
Yeah, she put herself in that position.
Right. For us, as you said, you had your legal pad. You had some questions that were deal breakers for you. And particularly as a woman of color, you would look crazy walking home with a Garrett. So that's a level of privilege that she was able to exercise in a way yeah. that I feel like we couldn't, or you probably could not as a bachelorette. So
it's my turn. Yeah, I just, you know, there's certain things that are deal breakers for me. And, you know, like, politics are a deal breaker for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, both Becca and Garrett in the media have tried to diminish this scandal by saying, I never realized the power behind a mindless double tap, quote unquote, and who's to say that anything anyone likes is truly what they believe in if it's just a double tap. But now they both have sponsored content on their Instagram pages and can't deny the monetary value of those same double taps. So what can we make of all of this, considering that social media and this power is now part of the show?
Well, wait, that's a loaded question. So so what's the question again?
So the question is, if they have said in the media that it's just him double tapping, and, you know, who's to say that you can tell what kind of person they are by what they like on Instagram, but they both have sponsored content on their Instagram and clearly make money off of those same double taps. So their values and where they lie are confusing to us as viewers. So what are we supposed right. to make of that?
I mean, let me just say this. I have purposely not said anything about the Becca and Garrett situation in regards to that, out of respect for Becca, because I like her. Mm-hmm. I will say that if she was going to choose to be with him, you know, they have to have an answer and they have to stick to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, whether it makes sense or doesn't. So, you know, like, all I say about that is, you know, there wasn't just one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a common denominator in all those different posts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we know what that is. And so, you know, for me, I think it's just very telling. And it would just be something that I couldn't unsee.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Right.
Same here.
Yep.
Yeah. It's interesting now watching. Yeah, just trying to reconcile everything.
Right, watching how they use Instagram versus what they say Instagram is to them as people is very contrasting to us.
One minute it's a minus double tap, the next they make money off the double tap.
Right.
So it's like, which is it?
It is what it is. Like, you can't try to disguise it or wrap it up and put it in a different package. Like, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, people either, you know, like, don't like it and move away from it, or just, you know, ignore it and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, like, pretend it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's what we can do.
Yeah. So, speaking of social media, let's talk about the future of the Bachelor franchise. So, it's no secret that people go on the show for fame and money, or just Instagram followers and just fame and attention. And we've been watching this whole Jenna and Jordan scandal play out. After Winter Games, Luke Pell, it was revealed that he had a girlfriend the whole time. Waboom was a thing. He didn't even have his website trademarked. I remember looking at that for weeks after he came on. Like, you didn't even have your website on GoDaddy. So how does this show keep its integrity with the power of influencer fame coming in?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I feel like I was talking to my friends about that. You know, social media could be what puts an end to this show for multiple reasons, you know, not just because of the Jenna Jordan, but also just because of, you know, the Lee, Garrett, whatever, you know, like it's just playing, you know, such a pivotal role in with the contestants on the show. I think that the only way the show can get past it is that somehow the show incorporates social media, or like a social media element into the show, or they do not allow people to do ads, which technically they're not, you're not supposed to anyway.
Mm. Oh, really?
You're not supposed to like do sponsored content or get ads and stuff?
Mm-mm.
Really?
Mm-mm. Not without permission.
Everybody's doing it. Shit.
Yeah, no, I know.
Wow.
Yeah, not without permission.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is interesting. So yeah, I agree. I think they need to figure out a way to incorporate social media, because it's weird that it's not even incorporated in the show. And then I think the show overall, I mean, over the last 20 years or so it's been on TV, there's been virtually, like, no changes to the process. It's still, you know, one man, one woman. They pick from contestants. They go on some dates. They have a fantasy suite. Someone gets down on one knee. Like, how, aside from, like, social media, like, do you have any other ideas that are things that you would like to see of how the show can update itself?
Well, see, that's what I agree. Like, and maybe I'm a different viewer because I didn't watch it, you know, over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's like, the same thing happens each time. You know, the characters are different.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's what makes the show different. But, you know, the process is the same. That's why I was a fan of Winter Games, because each episode, you didn't know what you were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what the competition was, who was going to be in the who, how it was going to go down, how they were going to be eliminated. It continued to change.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that was really interesting. I personally would like to see something like that, or, you know, I don't know if somehow it could be like a Big Brother element where it's live in the beginning, you know, in the mansion.
Yeah. Mm.
or, and so maybe like the fans get to pick, have a say in the rose ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think, but then I also think that that takes away from the element of the person is choosing who they really want to get to know better. And I, and because the process worked for me, I get protecting it.
Okay.
I think, yeah, there's definitely room for them to try things out. Like, they really did experiment with Winter Games, and maybe they, the Bachelor, Bachelorette's been working so well for so long that they're afraid to touch it, I guess.
No, I agree with that. I think they would have a lot of viewers that are upset, because people are really faithful about, you know, the show, and I don't think they like a lot of change.
Yeah, I can see that. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, I guess. Yeah. I guess that's their mindset. Yeah. I would love to see it change a little bit.
So what are your thoughts on Colton as the Bachelor?
Oh, God. I think it's very obvious how I think about Colton from my blog. he would not have been my first pick.
Okay.
See, this is what I love to do. This is what lawyers do. A lot of times in law, we take cases, when we write briefs, we take somebody else's words and we give them credit. So I'm going to take my friend Raven's words and give her the credit. She said it best when she said, he's into whatever's hot, you know, the it person. Now he's the it person. So, I mean, I think that he's doing what he wants to do. He wouldn't have been my choice. And I don't think that that's a secret from my Us Weekly blogs.
Yeah, ever since Raven said that, I couldn't get that out of my head either. That he goes after the hot new thing, and it's like, oh shit, if you watch his track record, that's literally it. Yikes.
Yeah, and I guess, like, for me, I'm very sensitive about the process because I was so skeptical, and then it worked. Yeah. So I do believe in it. I feel like if you have the right mindset and you go in, you don't go in thinking, oh my God, I'm about to find the love of my life. No, you just go in open. And I think that's the key. Just like open for whatever. So my fear with Colton is, to do that, you have to separate yourself from that Bachelor world. Like, because it really is a bubble.
Yeah.
And you are not in the real world when you're in that world. Like, you really have to step away from it. Like, get into your inner circle, go to work, do some everyday things, and then come back. Like, you need that break. He hasn't had that.
Right.
And so that's my fear with him. It's like, and then just the contradictions of the, you know, you're in the Becca, you know, she sends you home, you see her, you break all the way down, and then you bounce back like, I'm ready to go. Like, I just, and I wrote this in an article, like, I don't know who you are and what you want. And you meeting 30 women isn't going to help me, it isn't going to change my mind in that. Like, I just think that maybe he'd be great in a couple of years, you know? I wanted Blake.
Yes, that was my choice. That was your choice. We love Blake.
Love Blake.
My worry for Blake, though, is whether he was going to be ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think he was over Becca, but I still, like, wanted to see him. Like, he definitely was my choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is so fine.
So fine. Wish him all the luck, and he deserves a good
woman. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I read one thing, or I think I saw a meme or something, that Colton will be the first Bachelor, I think, or first contestant to film The Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise, and The Bachelor all in the same calendar year.
Yeah, he is. And so it's like, how can you, if you really give all of yourself, which I do think, you know, you saw that with Becca, you really, it is really hard to, because I can't say I gave all of myself in my season with Nick. I mean, when I said, I'm falling in love with you, I burst out laughing right after I said it.
What?
And they showed it. Go back and watch it. Oh. Now, I'm not taking away. I really did like Nick. I'm not going to say that I didn't because I truly did.
Yeah.
But I remember the pressure of, you know, like, you got to be open. You know, like, you need to say how you feel. And I remember the moment I said it, I heard myself, and I was like, oh, my God. And I put my face, and I, like, started laughing. It didn't take, I really did like him, but, I mean, it was a moment. But I think when you give all of yourself, like, I couldn't imagine if Brian was a bachelor and I was on his season and I gave myself to him the way that I did a bachelorette, I cannot imagine then being ready for the next person, which is kind of the fear that you had with Blake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could he be ready?
Right.
And it might have been the reason he didn't get it, because he really did give all of himself. I just, I don't know. I'm not into it.
Do you have any predictions for Colton's season? Justine and I think that they are going to play off his virginity thing so much. And
to the fullest.
I think there's going to be maybe one, maybe two, maybe three ladies who have some type of sex-related profession.
For sure. Yep.
That's my prediction.
Yep. Yeah. I think they're going to be, there's going to be a virgin, a born-again virgin. There's going to be
like a sex therapist.
Maybe somebody who's bisexual, maybe just doesn't. There's going to be somewhat like the opposite end of the spectrum where they're virgins, and there's going to be like some like vixen. Some porn star. It's going to come out that they were a porn star.
Or like a dominatrix or something.
Y'all are going to have to tell me how it is, because I'm not going to watch it.
You can listen to the podcast. Yeah. I'll be watching.
I just think you just need a break. It's like also not just about Colton. I just think that's what I mean about like you have to separate yourself. I haven't even been on the show in a year, over a year, but blogging for it, it was exhausting for me just as someone who wasn't a fan of the show before. You know, if you want me to talk about Real Housewives all day, every day, I can do that. But this is just like more not my speed. So I need a break, and I just think that this is the perfect time.
We'll allow you that. Definitely on this season, you could need a break.
So let's talk about your wedding special. We're putting it out in the world, we're putting it out in the universe. ABC, they're footing the bill. What is on your wish list for your wedding special when you get it? So your dress, venue, invitations, bridesmaids, all that stuff.
That is so sweet that y'all are putting it out there. It's still not going to happen.
No!
So I guess if I had a wish, if the number one wish would be to actually get a wedding special. But I just, they're not in the business of, like, weddings don't do well as far as ratings go for the network.
Really?
And so, yeah. And so it has to all be, because there are levels to it. You know, like, okay, the show may want to produce the wedding, but then the network has to buy it, and then it has to be distributed through Warner Brothers. So it's like a whole process. So it can't just be one person saying yes. I actually think the show wants to do a wedding because there hasn't been one in a while.
Yeah.
You know, like they've had some controversies, and so I think that this would be something positive. I just think that, like all the stars have to align for that to happen, and I'm in a space now where I just don't want to continue to put my wedding on hold at the possibility of getting a TV wedding. Like, I just don't want that. Brian and I are older. We want to have kids. So back to your original question. On my wish list is a special, but they need to hurry. They literally have to hit me up in like the next 2 months. I originally said I wanted to wear pants, but then I want Randy Rom to do my dress. She did a lot of my dresses on the show. And I've met with her a few times, and I originally knew exactly what I wanted. And then I saw this one dress, and it is a dress, like no pants. And I thought, that's what I want. I feel like that's something that if Brian saw me walk down the aisle and he would be emotional. And I think that I have this tough exterior, but I'm really sensitive and soft on the inside. And no, not a lot of people know that unless you're super close to me. And I felt like this dress showed that side of me. It showed a softer side. And then Randy made a comment to me when she was like, listen, all these things you could wear on a red carpet, but this, your wedding dress, you want it to be different.
Right.
And so that's So I know what I want it to look like.
Oh, nice.
So yes, I want Rainy Wrong to make it. Mm-hmm. And then location wise,
yes.
I feel like this sounds rude, but it's true. If we are footing the bill, then I would like to have it during the school year and destination where it eliminates the guest list because people can't come.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking either Columbia because it has meaning because of where Brian's family's from.
Right.
Dallas, mm-hmm. or even California. Just because the weather, if it is in the summer, the weather wouldn't be as terrible, depending mm-hmm. where we would have it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three places.
Nice.
It doesn't have to be in a church. It could be outside. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. Other than that, I just want like a really good DJ, mm-hmm. really good music. I just want it to be a party, everybody to have a good time. The wedding itself doesn't have to be all fancy. I mean, I don't want it to be like this glamorous affair. I think I want a more laid back, chill vibe for the wedding.
Nice. Okay. Good music. Everybody turn up. Yeah. Like, I think that's most important.
Yeah.
No, that is the most important. I think I'm going to be the person who's like, no, I'm not coming around to every table to take pictures. Just come find me on the dance floor.
Right.
One picture, that's where I'll be.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing about weddings. It's like, you have to go around and say hi to everybody, and like, it takes away from just getting to dance and turn up. Shit.
That's right. You know where to find me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of turning up, we need to talk about this bachelorette party. So where would you want your bachelorette party to be? Who from Bachelor Nation is invited? And how many strippers are going?
So funny. Cartagena is where I think the bachelorette party is going to be.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm really thinking that's where it'll be because I want to have the bachelorette party that people can, my single girls can have a good time, my married ones, and the ones in a relationship. I'm thinking we need a house.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Colombian men are attractive, so I feel like my single girls can get it in. And I haven't been. I just hear wonderful things about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be insane. Now, for Bachelor Nation, I know I talk more about the bachelorette party. I'm like, I could play that in my sleep. Weddings, not so much. From Bachelor Nation, who would be there? Astrid. I've been telling everybody about Astrid since next season. I have been telling everybody how great she is, how cool she is. I'm the closest to her out of everybody I was on the show with. And I love that everybody is just now getting to see that.
Yeah. I didn't pay attention to Astrid not one bit, but I love her now after Paradise. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the closest with her, like, out of all the girls.
Oh, cool.
So, Astrid, Alexis, Raven, so many of them, really. Raven, Christina, Jasmine, D'Lo.
Wow.
I'd probably invite Corinne.
Okay.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I like Corinne. Mm-hmm. I always have.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm forgetting somebody.
That's nice. That's a nice little
crew. And then there
may
be some other people. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be other people. Like, Bibiana will probably come.
Because
you don't really see me hanging out with, like, OCN.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't, if I'm going to invite people from other seasons, it would be those two.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really see me hanging out with a bunch of, like, people outside of my season.
Because
I'm just kind of, like, not as into it. Maybe because I'm older. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think maybe the young folk of the more recent seasons they seem very much into this world.
Yeah.
The Bachelor world and meeting each other and all that stuff, but sounds like you kind of just kick it with your girls from your season. That's fine, too.
Yeah, I think, like, you can see Jason and Blake, like, doing their thing, and I think you should, you know, because your time is so short. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it up. Go travel, go to events, go to concerts, do all of that. Soak it all up. You should.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think there has to come a point where you're like, okay, what am I going to use this platform for? How am I going to hustle with it?
Right.
I think a lot of people don't do that.
Right. Right. Yeah. This definitely opens up platforms and many doors.
Yeah.
So better run with it.
It doesn't. It doesn't. I think that's all. Like, it depends what you want to do. Because when I went to ESPN last year, they told me no.
Oh, okay. Really?
They said, we like you, but our sports audience doesn't relate to you. And a lot of people were like, well, you're a reality TV star. And I was like, no, I'm actually a lawyer.
Right.
But they couldn't get past Bachelorette because that's what they know me as. I'm known for. So it took a year of me, you know, hitting the ground, investing my own money in myself, not getting paid for things, to put myself out there to build something. And because people did not care that I was the Bachelorette unless I was going to talk about the Bachelorette.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. You got to really hustle and... You got to build your name in the way, your brand in the way that you want it to be. Yeah.
Instead of just behind the franchise.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we mention strippers? How many strippers
are
we having? Oh, yeah. There'll definitely be some there. Men and women.
Nice. Oh, my God. That sounds hilarious.
Like, if you think about it, it'll be there.
Okay.
Cartagena and Colombia in general is having a moment.
Yeah.
I feel like all over my timeline, everyone's going to Colombia lately. So I feel like that's a great locale for a bachelor party.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Rachel, I feel like you spilled all the tea you got. So we wanted to dig into some of these listener emails. All right, guys. That was our interview with the lovely Rachel Lindsay.
Yay. We learned a lot about the behind-the-scenes part of The Bachelor.
Yes. And I really appreciated getting a lot of insight into Brian.
Yeah.
And her relationship with Brian.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously were very critical of Brian.
Yes.
And huge Peter and Eric stans. Mm-hmm. So, I really appreciate that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, just learned a lot. Hope you guys did, too.
Yeah. We'll be back next week for a little bonus episode, the mailbag episode, where we dig into some listener emails with Rachel and get her advice from Rachel from us.
Yep.
Yes.
Let's get in your business, guys.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Hit us up on social media. We are everywhere now. We have been live on Twitter. The handle is #2BLKgirls, #1Rose.
And we are also now live on Instagram and Facebook at #2BlackGirls, #1Rose. And our email, our inbox is still open.
Mm-hmm.
So email us at #2BlackGirls, #1Rose at gmail.com.
Yep, and support the podcast. Buy some merch, y'all.
Yes, please buy some merch.
Yes, we got the t-shirts, the mugs,
tote bags.
We are looking fresh to death in our 2 Black Girls 1 Rose gear. So head on over to www.teespring.com. That's teespring.com/2BlackGirls, #1Rose.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.